Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. If lunch in a restaurant is part of your agenda this midday, how much thought do you give to whether and what you'll tip? Well, it turns out that many of our servers, hairstylists, and bartenders have some pretty big challenges staying above the poverty line. It has to do with the relationship to minimum wage, and there are some interesting initiatives that are designed to bring some clarity to that issue. We'll talk about them after this news from NPR. Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Hope you didn't put that winter coat away. Oh my goodness, I was going to switch out all my clothes last weekend. Glad I didn't. Sitting here in the turtleneck today. It's kind of crazy what's happening with this weather. You know, they do say the average last frost date, April 15th, and it would be just like this stinking winter to get to the 16th and throw us some lower than freezing wind chill factors, as it did last night. I don't know what's going on. We're at 6 minutes past the hour and glad to have you with us today. Now, when you venture out to your favorite restaurant or watering hole, you probably don't give a great deal of thought to the wage circumstance of the person who delivers your food. But those waiters, very much like hairdressers and other service professionals, are probably earning $2.13 an hour in many states, including Virginia. The federal minimum wage for other kinds of workers, as you likely know, is $7.25 an hour. And the idea is that the server's superior skill and charming interactions will cause you to volunteer to part with an additional 15% to 20%, which is supposed to bring your server to at least the minimum hourly wage. That's the idea. But it doesn't work out that way for millions of people across the country, and now there are efforts to change that. We'll dissect the tipped wage experience today on Hearsay. We want to hear from those of you who work in this type of service industry. Maybe you are a bartender, maybe you're a busing professional, maybe you're a wait staff person, maybe you're a hairdresser or somebody who works in the appearance industry, in the industries where tips are part of the expectation. We want to hear what your experience is today at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We start the program today with the young woman who produced this broadcast for us, and that's our intern, Adrian Mayfield. Adrian is a student at Old Dominion University, and she has done a great job for us this semester and has done a great job of producing this show. She did not originally feature herself being part of it, but we like to give our folks live radio experience, and so about 3 minutes to air, I just asked her, said, Adrian, I think you're the best one who can tell this story. Will you sit down and do it? And she said, okay. So, Adrian, well done for accepting the challenge. Good job.
Thank you.
And thanks for producing a great show and for being a great writer and for helping us out so much as you have since you've been with us. So you and like so many students in this community, we should point out, if you're not aware of this, this is a reality for many, many, many college students who go to Old Dominion, who go to other colleges and universities in the region. They are students who are also working jobs, working paying jobs, which makes this whole internship kind of complicated. But you work a paying job in a restaurant. We won't name it, but you work in a restaurant.
Yes, ma'am.
And so how long have you done that?
I've been a server for 5 years at the restaurant that I'm at currently for a little over 2 years.
I see. And so explain to us how your wages are paid. We just said $2.13 an hour is what the restaurant is obligated to pay you, right?
Right. You get paid $2.13 an hour as your hourly wage, and then the majority of that goes towards your taxes. So the only time that you see an actual paycheck is if you don't meet minimum wage. And usually that paycheck is very small. I think my last paycheck was $6 for a week.
And so the deal with that is the restaurant is obligated to give you the difference between $2.13 an hour and whatever your hourly average is when you put your tips on top.
Right.
Okay. And so usually you I would imagine are a great weight person. So, you know, you're probably making those tips, right?
Yes.
But most of your check then goes to taxes.
Yes.
So where are the issues? Walk through with us the difference or what happens and the difference between for you and your serving colleagues between getting those tips in cash and getting those tips on a credit card.
The restaurant can tell automatically how much you make on a credit card tip. So they have that on record. And then your cash tips, it's up to you to claim those at the end of the evening. So when you clock out at the end of the evening, they ask how much did you make in cash? And you have the choice of reporting how much you actually made or reporting less than you made. I usually report what I actually made. It's illegal not to, but the benefit of reporting less than what you actually made is that you're not going to be taxed as heavily. However, the flip side of that is that if you don't report that you made less than minimum wage, your employer isn't going to have to pay you on your check.
Interesting. So this is where the rub comes in for service workers.
Right. It's hard because at the end of the year, after taxes are done and you're filing, or at the beginning of the year when you're filing, state taxes, especially in Virginia, are very heavy. So if you've claimed all of it, all of your tips, it still doesn't usually cover what you are supposed to pay. For example, this past year, I had to pay $600 in state taxes because I only make $213 an hour, so they didn't take out enough, but I still didn't see any of that on a check. So I had to take $600 out of pocket or out of my federal taxes, and that's very, very common, and that's the biggest reason why a lot of servers don't claim everything that they make to lessen that.
I'm interested as well in what your experience is. Some of the research that Adrian did for today's show demonstrates that in Virginia, we typically tip. I didn't know that people don't tip, but apparently this is the case. Apparently, you've had amazing experiences in this regard. But in Virginia, we're in the middle of the pack in terms of what we tip. We typically tip in the range of 16% or so, but we also, most of us do tip, but a significant number don't tip.
Definitely. In the service industry, we call it being stiffed when you don't get tipped. And the bad thing about being stiffed is that when you work at a restaurant, especially with a bar and a bus crew, you have to tip out a certain percentage of your wage towards them. So if a table comes and stiffs me, then I still have to pay my bartender and my bus, or regardless of if I made anything.
It's really interesting. I didn't know this, that only 54% of customers actually tip. That really surprised me.
Definitely. I'd say probably on average, I get stiffed maybe once a shift, twice a shift. On the weekends, it's more prevalent, especially on like Saturday and Sunday nights and during tax season when people are coming out to eat who usually wouldn't come out to eat because they have their federal returns. You can make a lot of money during that time, but then there's also a lot of people coming out who don't usually eat out and they don't know the etiquette.
Yeah. So about 50% of Virginians actually tip, and the average tip in Virginia is 16%.
Maybe. Maybe.
Do you think that, I mean, what do you think, what is your average tip? What have you ever thought about that?
I would say it's anywhere between 10 and 15%. There are people who come and they tip 20% and 25%, and they help to supplement for the people who don't. But I would say on average, at least in this area, it's between 10 and 15%.
Really? Yes. And you've had people who very openly told you they're not going to tip you.
Yes, very recently. Very recently. I've had in the middle of service, people say that they aren't going to leave me a tip. And I wasn't sure why. I don't question why, because that will, you know, get me into trouble to question why. I just have to continue with my service. But it's very hard for a server to continue giving good service to someone.
I was going to say, do these people not what do you not understand about incentive? I mean, really? Sorry. Because I'm guessing at that point, if you're a human being, you're probably going to be pretty disinvested in doing anything at that point.
Right. It's hard because you don't want to give a table less than adequate service. But if they very openly tell you that they're not going to tip you and you have two or three other tables who are waiting on you, and usually the tables who don't tip you are the ones who need you the most. Mm. That's very often how it is. So they take away from your wages at other tables that you can't give them the best service.
Wow. Let's see. Let's go to Phil on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy. Great topic today. Just wanted to say that the IRS rules have changed as far as charging a service charge to parties of six or more, and that is now having a really big impact, especially when the patrons don't choose to provide a tip to the server.
Yeah, Phil. You know, basically, are you in the business? Are you in the accounting business or in the serving or the restauranting business?
Actually, I'm a dad, and my daughter's trying to make her way through college as a server, and so I hear quite a lot about this now.
Yeah, so the IRS has changed the rules?
Yes.
And
for the restaurant I work at, it's parties of eight or more. We used to be able to gratuitize, but now you can't gratuitize that. They've changed it to where at the bottom of the check, they post a percentage of 15%, 18%, and 20% before tax.
So it used to be, you're saying it used to be that they would automatically add that for large groups.
They would automatically add 18% for large groups.
And now they can't do that anymore?
Right. According to the IRS, they can't do that anymore. And then they post a suggested tip amount at the bottom of the check, but that's before tax. And that often discourages people from leaving better tips because they'll see the very minimum acceptable tip is 15% and they'll automatically go to that tip. I've known personally parties of 30, parties of 50 to come in and take up 2 or 3 hours of a server's time and then leave them very little, $5, $10 per server. When you have large parties, you have to split them and that tip between two servers at most restaurants. So when a party of 30 comes in and spends $300 or $400 and leaves $10, each server just work for 2 or 3 hours for $5.
Wow. You know, for me, this tipping thing is pretty easy. I just take the first number, double it, and, you know, throw extra on it. If, you know, like if it's 39, it's close to 40, I'll go 4 times 2, 8, boom, done.
Right.
You know, because that's just easy for me because I don't do math well. But I don't know that that's I think 20%, people do give often 20%.
20% is the acceptable now, and it is often given, as I said, anywhere between 10 and 20%. Usually it evens out if someone is very generous on an evening and gives you maybe 25%. It'll make up a little bit for the people who weren't as generous.
Adrian Mayfield with us today, 18 minutes past the hour. Thank you for being here and for sharing your experience. I think it really helps people kind of see what's going on. And Phil, you are a dad and has a child working through school, and this is a very common experience in the community, which is why we wanted to talk about this. The odds are very good that the young server who's serving you is probably between the ages of 18 and 25. The odds are excellent that they're trying to work their way through school. So, Phil, thanks for joining us today. 18 minutes past the hour. We're glad to have Christopher Colburn with us today, an associate professor of economics at ODU. He's done extensive research on this issue of income distribution. And Christopher Colburn, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Kathy. You're welcome.
Yeah, I wonder, as you look at the research around this issue and income distribution, it seems pretty clear that that those folks, depending on where they are along this tipped worker continuum, 3.3 million in America, that they've got some serious challenges here, some of them.
Well, yes, some of them do, of course, but realize they're probably not going to be in that job for all that long. Mm. You know, like our student is going to graduate and go on and make more money and hopefully give some of it back, more of it back to ODU. And and so they're not likely to stay in that situation all that long. And so attempts that would try to, say, raise that 213 could actually affect their employment.
So you're saying that businesses would say, well, I can't afford to pay that,
right.
And so therefore I won't be employing as many servers.
Right, and that would require either, you know, some sort of have higher costs on the firm at a time when, you know, we're seeing prices of food go up and healthcare costs going up for small businesses. Adding another cost to them is not going to be very good for them.
Hmm. So your contention is, and I guess the research bears this out, that while there are certainly professional waiters and wait staff, many of them working very hard in this community and making very and delivering exceptional services, who have chosen this as a career. Most of them are working in higher end restaurants, and it's a longer term strategy for them.
That's right.
But for most of the servers, this is going to be a temporary circumstance. So we want to hear from you today. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. And we're glad to have Arun Ivaturi with us today, as well, a campaign strategist who works with the National Employment Law Project. He leads a campaign, that organization, I should say, leads the campaign to pass a minimum wage increase at the federal level. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
You bet. So Chris Colburn has sort of laid out the business philosophy on this, which is, you know, if I have to pay more than this, then maybe I don't hire as many people. We just heard from our intern, Adrienne, about what her experience is like in this regard. We know there's this squishy middle ground with the cash tips that come in that may be being claimed and certainly are legally required to be claimed, and many times we know are not claimed. This, it seems to me, is all a piece of this federal minimum wage conversation we've been having at some level. And so what do you think, what does your organization see as a way to, as the biggest challenges in the system, the way it's set up right now?
Well, I think first I wanted to say, I think it's great that you had Adrienne on the program to describe firsthand what the experience of tip servers is like. And the thing I would want to do is just sort of broaden that to make sure listeners understand that while there are lots of servers who are trying to make their way through college, as Adrienne is, in fact, the median age of tip workers is much older. It's around 31, and a full 30% of tip workers are parents. So you have a number of people who are trying to make a living and support children on tip wages. And I think that what the federal legislation that's been proposed would do would make the 213 federal tip minimum wage significantly higher. It would instead peg the tip minimum wage to the full federal minimum wage and make that peg at around 70%. And we have experience in states that have gone above and beyond what the federal government does. States like California, Oregon, Washington State, Nevada, Minnesota, Alaska, their law provides that any tip workers gets the full state minimum wage. And any tips that they receive is income over and above what they receive from the minimum wage. And in those states, the restaurant industry itself projects significant employment growth, significant sales growth over the next 10 years. And the data shows that the restaurant industry in those states is thriving. So I would dispute the idea that if we raise the tip minimum wage and pay servers and other folks who receive tips, and there are lots of folks who are not servers, car washers, airport workers, the person who pushes your wheelchair when you make your flight, the person who parks your car, all these folks receive tips and make their money off of tips, and the standard or what's socially the norm for tipping those workers isn't necessarily as high as what we often tip restaurant servers. And so it's really important, I think, that the federal government acts to raise the tip minimum wage and do what a lot of states have already done and make tips something that people receive over and above what they receive in wages, not a substitute for wages.
And this is you bring up the demographics of this. Certainly, I'm aware of people in this community who are what you would call, I would call, professional servers. This is their profession. They do it very well. And the ones that I know are in their 40s and 50s, and this is their chosen profession, and they do a magnificent job of it. And it makes a huge difference in the dining experience, you know, when you have someone who takes this very seriously. But if we look at the gender issues around this, it's very interesting that two-thirds of the folks in tipped jobs are women, 70% of those restaurant workers. And so if we think about single women with families, I guess that's where that issue comes in that you're talking about, that this is really a very broad demographic.
That's absolutely right. And as you point out, a lot of these women are supporting families. And the data show that tip workers, and particularly restaurant workers, really experience poverty at a much greater rate than the overall population. So the poverty rate for tipped restaurant workers is three times the rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce. So I think that kind of shows that, you know, a lot of people have an association of, you know, if you go to a very nice restaurant, someone who's a server there, they probably do pretty well with their tips. But there are lots of folks who work in restaurants and work in other occupations. They may not be as high-end as some of the nicer restaurants, and they're trying to support families, and they're having a hard time of it. And partly that's because, you know, maybe you make a great, and I'm sure Adrienne can speak to this, maybe you make a great income on a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. But you might have bad weather. You might have a downturn in the economy. You might have a lot of reasons why there's some nights you just don't do too well. And then there's some occasions where, you know, your restaurant may not be giving you the shifts you need to earn enough income. So it causes a lot of variability and unpredictability in income, which is really hard if you're trying to raise income.
Well, and there's so much in that scenario over which you don't have control, isn't there? I mean, for example, if you have a new chef in the kitchen who isn't quite getting it done and, you know, they don't have any control over that. Adrian was telling me before we went on the air today that I don't know why I'm chuckling. That was not funny at all, what she said. That I think the absurdity of it was really striking to me, that she had a someone in the restaurant recently who told her supervisor that she was not going to tip because Adrian just looked tired. And I thought, wow, well, maybe she is tired because she's working here. She's working in a restaurant trying to graduate from college. Maybe there's an invitation in that. I don't know. Arun Ivatari is with us today from the National Employment Law Project. Chris Colburn's with us from Old Dominion. Chris, can you tell us if there is anything online in Virginia to deal with this idea of a tipped minimum wage? Any efforts underway at the state level?
I do not know. I would be against that, by the way, but I really don't know if there's any
and
effort
so
right now to do that.
Against that, for what reason? Because of the issue of
sure. Well, the from if we raise the rate to from 213 to 725, I by my back of the envelope calculation, that'd be like a 300% increase in the wage payment that the firm would have, and I just respectfully disagree that that's not going to have an effect. I think it is going to have an effect, and less people will be employed. And many times the people that he's talking about that might be low-income households who are relying on these type of jobs will find those jobs hard to get.
So, Arun, how are they doing that in these states where they've made that switch?
Well, states that have made the switch have done it in a sort of phased-in way, and that's what the federal legislation calls for as well. That, one, it wouldn't go to the full minimum wage. It would go to 70% of the full minimum wage and over a few years. And the states that have sort of eliminated their tip minimum wage or tip credit, as it's called, have done it over a series of years. And again, I think the data, the lived experience of those states and particularly restaurants in those states, and you know, I should note that it's the restaurant industry that is the biggest lobbyist against raising the tip minimum wage. They spend something like over $2 million a year lobbying on all issues, but this is one of their priorities. You know, the restaurants in those states, according to the industry's own projections, are doing quite well. So I think there is a way that, you know, the restaurant industry and other industries that have tip workers can absorb these costs if the increase takes place in a sort of phased-in way. And I think consumers sort of understand intuitively that tipping is something to do for good service and should be a gratuity over and above what workers get in wages. I don't know of another industry where consumers have to substitute in for the employer in paying their workers their wages. And I don't see why that should be the case in the restaurant industry or another industry where you have tip workers.
We're 29 minutes past the hour. Chris Colburn, thank you so much for being with us from Old Dominion University. Appreciate it.
Can I just say one more quick thing? I think a lot of the analysis is presuming that the restaurant owners will not react to this. And I think they will react to it by maybe changing the tip pool system, by looking for other type of technologies for people to pay. So I would hope in the analysis those type of scenarios would be played out, because I think
how they might respond.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great point, Chris. Thank you for being with us today from Old Dominion University.
Okay.
Chris Colburn, associate professor there of economics. He does research on income distributions, redistribution policy, and he's also recently published work on education spending and U.S. banking policy. We're at half past the hour. Carl's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Kathy.
You're welcome.
As always, a wonderful topic. I'm listening to this, and there's three things that pop in mind. One is there's an issue of prejudice here. Many of the workers are either students, low income, or minorities. Second is most restaurants, and we're talking, I'm thinking of upscale, make enough money to pay normal wages. And three, the issue is also that there are many women who are separated, divorced, or have deadbeat husbands who trying to juggle education, work, and raising a family, who are penalized unnecessarily for this. And I work in the court system where they come through for mediation. And we see this. He doesn't want to pay because she's only making this. And he says, well, she could do better. And finally, why can the industry not be run like every other business? This is what we pay folks, and if they don't produce, we fire them.
So Carl, an interesting question. Arun, I wonder why does, and we're again, we're talking about a number of service professions, but most of this affects the restaurant industry. How did that happen, that restaurant workers and other service workers got into this, were put into this situation of having a much lower minimum wage? Why not just everybody making what the minimum wage is? Where did that happen?
Well, historically, when the minimum wage was established in 1938, certain categories of workers were excluded, and in that included folks who worked at hotels, motels, restaurants, and similar employees. And then in 1966, there was an expansion of the law covering the minimum wage. That law is called the Fair Labor Standards Act. And that expansion resulted in hotel, motel, restaurant, and other employees that had been excluded now being included under the act. And I think there was a negotiation, frankly, at that point with the employers in those industries. And so a tipped minimum wage was set at that time that was 50% of the full minimum wage. Over time, as the law has been amended, that link, that coupling between the tipped minimum wage and the full minimum wage was broken. And so now the tipped minimum wage is actually less than 30% of the full minimum wage. So 213 is less than 30% of 725.
In addition, I understand that has not been raised over time, whereas the regular minimum wage has been, and so the effect of that is dramatic as well.
That's correct. The 213 figure has been in place now since 1991.
Julie is on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Julie. You're on the air. Hi, Julie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Okay. Go right ahead.
I personally will boycott any business that does not pay their personnel a decent wage. In particular, Walmart, who says prices will.
We understand, Julie, and that is certainly a position that lots of people are beginning to take, which is to say that's a social position that people are taking, which says, I object to your policies, and therefore I will boycott your establishment, which is certainly something that people can do. 27 minutes before the hour. Is it Kosage on the line from Newport News? I hope I've said that right, but I hope you'll... Oh, Kosagi. Okay, thank you. I want to make sure that I get that right. Welcome, and thank you for being with us.
All right, how you doing?
Hi, fine, thanks. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I worked at a restaurant for 5 years, and I worked directly with the wait staff, and I'm very sympathetic to the whole argument about tips in general. My wife and I, when we go to the restaurant, we personally always pay 20% and nothing less than that. As far as people going out to eat, people need to understand that it's a luxury to eat out, and if you can afford the luxury and the services that's provided by the waiter, then you can afford to pay these waiters more in terms of tips. And I'm very in favor of if they can get a better minimum wage and paying that extra price that goes into the food, then I'm all for that.
All right, Kosagi, thank you for the call. And this is a very interesting point he's making because so many people I've talked to, if you've had the experience of waiting tables, they say that is transformative in your own approach to tipping, because once you've walked a mile in those shoes, you know what that's like. We're at 25 minutes before the hour. I'm glad to have Michael McCall with us today, a professor of marketing at Ithaca College and a visiting scholar and hospitality research fellow in the hotel school at Cornell University. His research has really focused on creating customer loyalty programs and the perceptions of price and value. Michael McCall, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking about this issue of tipping and sort of how it came to be and what we what we think about that. We note that North Carolina actually is one of the highest tipping states in the country. So well done, Utah Heels. Good job. North Carolina is the third highest tipping state at an average of 16.7%, and 53% of North Carolinians tip. I guess I was really surprised by the numbers on this, that Alaska has the highest rate of tipping at 60%. I think I had an assumption that everybody tips, such is definitely not the case.
Absolutely.
And so how did we evolve to what we think about tipping, and what are some of the trends?
Okay, the brief history, and there's a story everybody likes and a story that's probably true, was that it began in Europe years and years ago, and the tip was in fact an acronym for to ensure promptness, where presumably people would clip coins to their server's clothing in an attempt to acquire future service. That's the story people like. The actual story that is probably more likely to be true is one in which people would travel from castle to castle and visit, and they realized the extra burden that was put on the staff, and they would give them gifts upon leaving. So that's probably where it originated. I think the interesting thing, the trend right now, I think, is obviously we're moving up in terms of the amount tipped, seemingly among younger consumers especially. The tip seems to have moved from 15 to 20%. But I think relevant to this particular issue, I think the interesting question is that while some estimates indicate that $40 billion were tipped in restaurants last year, the question is it really, comparable across different categories, whereas people in higher-end restaurants can probably make a very good living living off of tips.
Right.
But that's not the majority.
Yes.
It may also be good for college students. But in between all of those people who are trying to make a living and pay their bills at the end of the day, I think that's a real challenge with a minimum wage down at $2.13 an hour.
Daniel's on the line now from Virginia Beach. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air. Daniel, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay. So I also have worked as a tip worker as a server mm-hmm. back in Florida. And I would just like to offer a different perspective. I think that my coworkers and myself included would not prefer if the minimum wage were raised and kind of the social contract of the person dining to provide the tip rather than the restaurant to provide the wage. Because personally, I was working at a very high-skill restaurant, just a family restaurant, but I would say that 99.9% of the time, I was always making well over minimum wage, mm-hmm. at least, probably averaging at least $15 an hour. And now my restaurant, I don't know if this was Florida state law, but I think that this is an interesting way to do things. Now, if you were to ever, your tipped wages or your tips were not to make out the equivalent of a minimum wage salary, so if you were to work 6 hours
right.
and make under, whatever the equivalent of 6 hours is, $7.75
right.
or whatever the minimum wage may be, the restaurant would actually cover that at the
right.
end of the night. And
yes, and that is the
that
case.
Wage.
That is the case, and that is the legal requirement. And Daniel, what do you think what do you attribute the fact that you were able to make $15 an hour in tips? I mean, were there techniques that you employed? What did you do to do that?
There definitely were techniques, but you were always just prompt and courteous, and mm-hmm. you just gave the people what they wanted, and you provided good service every time, regardless of whether, there is kind of this culture of, I know this type of customer, they're going to tip this amount, or, mm-hmm. and a lot of the times it is quite prejudiced, but for me personally, I would just serve everybody, assuming that they, were going to tip great, or just make sure they had a good experience. And I just found I had a very good experience doing that, and always made the money that I was wanting to make.
Are you a server now?
No, I'm not a server. Uh-huh. I was actually serving through college and a little bit after college. So
okay.
I have a regular career now.
Well, Daniel, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're at 21 minutes before the hour. It's interesting that Daniel defines that as what he's doing now is a regular career. Michael McCall, I know you work with...
Yes.
people to try to help them increase the degree of tips that they get. And what are some of the, I guess we'll start with this question that Arun raised earlier, which has to do, and does Arun need to, do we need, I'm sorry, Michael, hang on the line. I'm not doing a good job of traffic comping today. Arun, you've been very kind to remain with us longer than your obligated time, and I really appreciate that. What do you see as the likelihood that there will be some change on that? You said you expect this to be incremental. What would you be looking for in terms of incremental change?
I think, you know, action is really hard on the federal level because of things getting stuck in Congress, as a lot of legislation does right now. And despite, I think, you know, rather large majorities of Americans supporting raising the minimum wage generally, Congress has yet to act on it. But the president has made the call that, you know, states and localities that are able to move increases in the minimum wage should do so. And I think that is where the more immediate activity is. There are a number of states that have very recently raised the minimum wage and a number of others that are in the process of moving legislation in their states to do so. And a number of those places are contemplating increasing the tip minimum wage as well. And some states as well, I think I would just point out and reiterate, don't have a tip minimum wage, meaning they pay their tip workers the same amount they pay everyone else, and that's what the employer is obligated to do. That includes a state like Minnesota, which just passed a minimum wage increase to $9.50 an hour, and Minnesota has no tip minimum wage, so that means a server in Minnesota will get $9.50 an hour from their employer and get to keep the tips over and above that. And Kathy, I know you just referenced Alaska. Alaska is another one of those states where the tip minimum wage is the same as the full minimum wage. So the Alaska minimum wage is currently $7.75 an hour, and that's what that's what employers pay their servers and other tip workers in that state. And I think it's interesting that you noted that even though that's the case, people there still tip
at a considerable rate.
So.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's a great connection. Arun Ivatori, thank you so much for being with us today from the National Employment Law Project. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kathy.
You
thank
bet.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's a really interesting connection. We're at 19 minutes before the hour. We're glad to have Michael McCall with us.
Yep.
We're talking about this history of tipping and kind of what we do. And so now you say the average tip is moving toward 20%. Now I'm going to have to bump it up to 25 because I was like, pay a little bit more. But we're wondering, our dear listeners, what do you tip? 440-2665. 1-800-940-2240. As you think about ways to help people who are, even for a brief period of time or as careers, working in these fields that rely so heavily on tips, what are some strategies and techniques that you share with people to help them increase that percent of the tip on the bill?
You know, I think that's a great question. There are a number of them out there. There are probably close to 20 that we talk about. A lot of them center around personalizing the service, that here, as the server, I'm here to care for you. It's kind of like what Daniel was saying, that, you know, you talk about how, you let them know that they're important. You fix things. I mean, one of the unique things about restaurants is a lot of things can go wrong, and the customer can still leave happy.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with how you recover from mistakes. It has to do with, you know, letting the customer know that you care, you value their business. Now, some of the little things that people do included things like offering candy or introducing themselves by name. So those are some of the things that seem to work, you know. And I think, you know, certainly that does increase the tips. I've been working with a couple of people in restaurants. Several of the female servers use a happy face, but they often putting their names on the back of the check, introducing themselves both before and after.
Yes.
Kind of lets you know that I appreciate you coming here and I was glad to serve you today.
The other thing it occurs to me that does, and it works in so many various aspects of life, you know, it occurs to me when you make a relationship with someone, you know, it's really hard to stiff them on a tip, you know,
absolutely.
So all of those things can, so to the extent that one can do it, you know, that's helpful. 17 minutes before the hour. And that, by the way, Adrian, that doesn't suggest that you haven't done that. It just says that some people, just don't get it. 17 minutes before the hour. By the way, interestingly, you may be curious about what the state is that has the lowest rate of tipping. It's actually Delaware. This is unbelievable. 37.9% of people in Delaware tip. And the average tip is also not incident, not coincidentally, the lowest in the country too at 14%. You know, I'm just curious, Michael McCall, I've got a theory about that. I wonder what your theory is about why that's the case.
You know, we've been puzzling over that data. What I think is happening is that they're combining lots of different sources. And it's who you actually source from. You know, I would certainly, you know, an IHOP, International House mm-hmm. of Pancakes, will worker will learn different amount of tips than, say, someone who works at a Ruth Chris. And so I think, you know, the way in which the data were collected, I think if you took a deeper dive, you might find out that there are unique pockets that may help to explain some of this.
You know, I have now completely imploded my theory, actually, because my theory... Look at this. And of course, I have so much experience to do this with. But my theory was Delaware is a small state that is, and forgive me all of you who are from Delaware, but you know, you go through, a lot of people go through Delaware from the south to get to New York. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, okay, it's transient. You know, people stopping by, they know they're not going to be back. So maybe they feel like I don't have to kind of establish much of a relationship. So I thought that might be the case. You know, small state, lots of people moving through it. But then Hawaii is the second on the list, and nobody moves through Hawaii on their way to somewhere
right.
else. And, you know, their average tipping rate is only 15.1%. So there you have it. That completely blew up my theory. Mike's
but
on the line.
Hand, maybe not.
Maybe.
Maybe the idea is that if they're not buying repeat service.
That could be. Oh, that's an interesting point. So you might think you're in Hawaii on vacation. And, interesting point. Let's go to Ross Eisenbray. He is the vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, and he's worked as a legislative director and works on some of these issues of raising this tipped minimum wage. Ross Eisenbray, welcome, and thank you for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. And so how do you come at this issue? What has been the experience in states where they have raised this this tipped minimum wage? What's been the experience there?
Well, the most important thing is that the poverty rate for servers in those states is lower than it is in states that don't require the employer to pay directly the full minimum wage. And it's a significant difference. It's 6 full percentage points lower in the states that require the full minimum wage. And I think it's important to know that those states are doing just fine. The restaurants are also doing just fine. The National Restaurant Association does a restaurant industry forecast each year, and it actually forecasts stronger growth in the states that require the full minimum wage than in the rest of the states that don't.
So how is that happening when we hear that there would be great concern about increasing those minimum wage costs and it would cause the employer to say, I'm not going to hire as many people? How is that happening?
Well, it just, you know, that it's the fear that employers have. Employers surely would rather have their customers pay the wages to the employees than to have them pay it themselves. And that, you know, that's just human nature. But the fact is that in the states that have done this, and it includes California, which is a tenth of the nation's economy, it hasn't had any kind of drastic effect or any real negative effect on employers at all.
Mike is on the line.
All it does is lead to better pay for the workers and, as I say, a lower poverty rate for workers who have a high poverty rate.
Mike is on the line. Hang on 1 second. Let me go to Mike on the line from Hampton because I've got a lot of callers I need to get into. And Michael McCall, I'll come right back to you. Mike, sure. Hi, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks. My brother-in-law just came here from Paris, France, where he's living now. He said they don't tip over there, and he's not used to tipping. Prior to that, he lived in Australia, and I got the impression that they don't tip in Australia. From my perspective, tipping is for service, but I wonder if the chef misses out some because the quality of food enhances my tipping, and sometimes the service is lousy, but the food is good. But typically, we try to shoot for that 20%,
okay.
Although I believe that if the workers got paid, the tipping would continue if the service was good. So that's my position.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. Mike McCall, can you contrast for us, and I want to give you a chance to comment mm-hmm. on what we were talking about earlier, but can you contrast for us the European and the American experience, give us a sense of why that might be the case?
Well, I think part of it is it comes out of tradition, but I also think in France there's a service charge that's automatically added.
I see.
Consequently, so the service charge being already there, the tipping, the custom of tipping may not have developed.
Yeah.
The other thing, speaking to the earlier comment, is that when employers take a chance and pay a higher wage, they increase the stability of their workforce. I mean, the real problem in the service industry, particularly in restaurants, is the annual turnover rate is in excess of 100%. People leave where they can make more money. So the idea is if you were to, you know, increase that minimum wage, make it more livable, your likelihood of hanging on to those employees goes up as well.
You know, it's an interesting point. The other thing, and I don't know, I may be completely out in left field here, but we did a show a couple of years ago about alcohol and drug abuse, and they were saying that one of the industries where you see this a lot is in the restaurant business, because there's a lot of cash that changes hands, and there are people who are getting out of work at, you know, midnight, 1, 2 in the morning when nothing else is open, and that was sort of the theory behind that. You know, I wonder about that, Michael McCall, from the perspective of this, and it would be interesting to know if there's any research in these states where they have changed the minimum wage structure to see if there's any impact on those numbers.
I mean, I think that would be a very good question to ask. I am not currently aware of any.
I don't know whether there was, but yeah.
Several. I suspect there is some work going on in the economics area that is looking at that.
Ross Eisenberg, do you know any research that may be underway in that regard?
I do not. I'm sorry.
I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting idea. There you go. Somebody should get a grant for that. Catherine's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. I always tip, and I always tip about 20%, but I'm always a little befuddled what to do if I really have really bad service.
Sure.
It's rare, and it hardly ever happens, but I don't know what to do when it does happen.
It's a great question, Catherine. Thank you for the call. Michael McCall, what do you recommend?
Well, I think, you know, letting the server know, I mean, I do think servers are aware when they deliver less than optimal service, and they certainly will admit to it. Again, separating the service from the food experience. What did the server actually have control over? What I've seen happen, and servers will actually acknowledge this, that they know when they didn't deliver great service, and you can let them know that obviously that impacted your willingness to tip. I've seen that happen before, and when I've talked to servers, they've generally said, you know, and they kind of accept it because it's
reason.
But again, service recovery. There's so much you can do to recover.
So true.
And just let them know.
You know,
if
that's what my own experience of this is, if the meal is taking longer than it should take, it goes so much further. Don't be afraid to come up to the table and say, you know what? I know this is taking longer than it should take, and I'm really sorry. Can I get you another round of drinks while we're waiting? You know, just something that says, I get it. This is not how we usually do business.
Exactly. And I don't think you even have to give much. I mean, I'm willing to pay for my food. Just let me know that you cared.
Absolutely. Yeah. Brad's on the line. And by the way, by drinks, I meant non-alcoholic drinks. I wasn't suggesting we throw down another round of Bloody Marys. Brad, although, hey, if that works, whatever. Brad is on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Brad. You're on the air. Brad, can you turn down your radio? You're on the air. Okay, Brad, we'll come back to you. Let's go to Barbara on the line from the Eastern Shore. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a comment about Delaware.
Okay.
And if Delaware has no sales tax, and so a lot of people I know from here down in Virginia who go up, and a lot of people from Pennsylvania go shop in Delaware because they're going to get a bargain. And so I'm thinking that maybe Delaware, I didn't know that statistic, but I'm thinking that maybe Delaware just attracts a lot of cheap people trying to get a bargain.
All right. I'd like to point out that was Barbara on the line from the Eastern Shore who said that to everyone from the Free State, not Kathy Lewis. Well, Barbara, you know, that is an interesting point, though, and it makes one wonder, not about that, but I mean about whether if you're kind of in a bargain state of mind, that may take over your thinking. Thank you for the call. Scott's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Hi.
So I used to serve back in the early 2000s for about 5 years, and it was normal for us, at least in my restaurant, to only tip, or rather, at the end of the day, we would only say we made about 10 to 12% of our sales, regardless of what we made. And I thought that might have an impact on statistics countrywide when you were talking about.
Do you mean the fact that people don't report the fullness of their tips?
That's correct.
Got
so we would make a little bit more money in our biweekly check.
that way.
I see. Okay, Scott, thank you for the call. Ross Eisenbray, you know, when you're dealing with cash, that can be tough from the perspective that Scott raises. How confident are we in the numbers that we're using to make these calculations?
Oh, I think it is hard to know for sure. There's everybody in the industry, I think, believes that tips are underreported. And I think that the numbers are also clear that employers are not making up when workers are surveyed, employers are not making up what they're supposed to make. So let's say you only got $5 altogether, including your tips and what you were paid directly. The employer is supposed to make up the rest of it to get to $7.25.
Uh-huh.
1 in 10 workers or more say that the employer shorts them on that they
right.
never end up getting the entire 725. So that is a problem with a cash economy.
And trying to keep track of
everybody is hard.
And that's called wage theft. And there have been some cases where that's been, where that certainly has been alleged. Investigations have been undertaken by the Department of Labor. It's really, very, Michael McCall, a very serious issue.
Yes, and I think there's another part to that we've been hearing in various places where cash tips go to the servers, whereas credit tips that are listed on a credit card, that some servers, since the credit card charges the restaurant owner 3%, that the restaurant owner is then dinging the server tips for 3% if they're included as part of the credit card bill.
Wow, really? Wow.
Yeah.
So these
and that, again, kind of changes the numbers.
Well, it does, and you know, I think it's so very different, isn't it, than the way the most other professions earn their income. I mean, there's an hourly wage. You get it. You do your hour. You get your wage. You take the taxes out, and you're done. It's a much more complicated episode when you're dealing with this in the food
and the inconsistency. Industry. You never know week to week what you will make.
Right, right. Food service and drinking places have added more jobs in recent months. And so that's good news, but again, it almost in some respects exacerbates this challenge that we've been talking about today, which is the complication for people in the food service industry. And as one of our earlier callers suggested very strongly, you know, there are gender and race implications here. Women make up 2/3 of the tipped workforce. They are 70% of restaurant servers. People of color make up 40% of all tipped workers. And people of color make up more than half of the tipped and restaurant workers who fall below the poverty line, which happens in this business, no question about it. More than 1 in 10 employees say their hourly wages are less than the minimum wage, even with tips, and more than 13% say their employers are misappropriating their tips. So we'll continue to watch this legislation in terms of its chances for passage. Ross Eisenbray, thank you for being with us today from the Economic Policy Institute.
Thanks, Kathy, for
Appreciate
having
it.
Me.
You bet. And Michael McCall, thank you for being with us as well to talk about the whole culture of tipping and service. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
You bet. Okay, so our take-homes for today, I'm increasing my tips to 25% for regular service. That's going to happen. And so average tipping in Virginia, somewhere in the range of 16%. So when you have someone serve your meal, you might just give a little thought to what's going on in their world and to what their circumstance may be. And we'll continue to keep an eye on the prospect of this legislation, which would propose an incremental increase in what they call that tipped minimum wage. So there you have it. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we will see you right back here tomorrow. And we thank our producer today, Adrian Mayfield. Well done. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.